Welcome to Parent Talk hashtag with Bev. I am a Black British mother of West Indian descent with two young adults living in my home, and we're based in the UK, London. I'm not an expert at anything, just sharing my thoughts, opinions and experiences in the hope that it helps someone, another parent or someone somewhere. So last time we were talking about youth safety, and today I've had some parents join me. So please welcome these parents as they share their thoughts on whether or not youth safety is still relevant. Welcome, ladies. Is youth safety still an issue? Is it still relevant for us to be talking about? Anybody want to give their opinion about that?
Of course it is, when young people are still needlessly dying.
Yeah.
I agree. It's so relevant. And we're still hearing now more than ever that young people are dying in lockdown, even.
Yeah.
So it's very relevant.
But these are people who should be starting their lives, not finishing it.
And I think that is the thing. I mean, before I came into this conversation, I was having a conversation with my daughter. I said to her, would you join us? And she was like, no. And then we had like half an hour of a talk and she was like, it is still relevant, Mum. You know, but it is down. She said, at least, she says she doesn't think that we're going to find a solution to youth safety but we should keep trying and we need to be having the conversation. Because she said the young people are still going to do what they're going to do. And if we want them, if we want to have a future, if we want our children to have a future, we've got to start talking about youth safety now. Parents have been talking about youth safety before it became a term of youth safety. Welcome to the chit chat, LT.
Thank you.
The question really is youth safety still an issue? Is it still relevant? Should we still be talking about it? And people are saying, yes, we should. So talk. I'll tell you a story. I was on WhatsApp, family WhatsApp. A young boy, 20, in Birmingham, got stabbed in the head. I mean, he's lucky that he's in hospital and he's recovering. I don't know the circumstances around why he's got stabbed in the head, but youth violence is still happening, even during lockdown. So what could we suggest? Do we think our voices are important enough for politicians to want to listen to what we've got to say about how they might be able to work on solving some of these issues that are bringing around youth violence?
I think that's one of the things that's why it's so important with Citizens Campaign and the Southwark, you know, Youth for Change, that the young people are talking about how they're worried about youth safety, that they themselves, and for them to be talking about it and for them to be expressing their worries and concerns and for them to be saying that they want solutions, then that obviously says it's not something that's going away, is it? And even though we as big people are worried about it, so are the young people. Mm-hmm. And at some point, you know, this has all got to come together, you know, and I that's why I work with citizens. That's why, you know, I'm passionate about a parent commissioner, because I think that somewhere along the line, somebody's got to take responsibility for all this and somebody's got to do something about it.
Well, you know, we're all parents here, okay? The responsibility I take for it is that I have conversations with my children about how to try and stay safe. Yeah. But I don't know all the things that are coming at them unless they tell me. And then even if they tell me, I've got to try and manage the way I respond to it, because I could turn around and just be like, you're not going out. You're not going to do this. You're not going to do that, because I'm scared. And I've got two girl pitney.
I think it is, but it's all very well, you know, certain some of us, you know, worrying about it. How do we get, with Southwark Youth for Change, they had a big campaign with Peckham and Southwark citizens around the police tweeting pictures of knives. And the police were tweeting pictures of knives because, and we couldn't understand why. So when we actually met with the assistant borough commander, we met with one chap, and one of the children just quite said to him, "Why do you tweet them?" Quite directly, "But can you tell us why you do tweet them?" And they said, he said, "Well, we want to show people, you know, what we're confiscating," which I can understand. I can understand that part of it. But the young people's response was, "But the people that you're trying to get at are not looking at Twitter." They're not looking at Twitter. They're not looking at pictures of knives. And also, a lot of the people that would look at those pictures are not going to be bothered by it. You and I are going to be, you know, us people here are going to be horrified by it. But the people that you're trying to, that you're trying to sort of, you know, stop, I don't think are going to be. Anyway, the police have agreed and they've stopped tweeting pictures of knives, which the young people were really pleased about. But I think sometimes it's like the thing, isn't it? It is what they're doing, what, you know, what the young people feel is the solution. You know, there's the young people are not being listened to in some ways, which is why Citizens is great, because they are, you know, encouraging the people to be listened to. And I think the more young people that can get involved in these you know, these talks and these discussions and these programs, it's just got to be, you know, it's just got to be for the good, isn't it? Because like you say, that you're talking to your children, but what about the parents who don't talk to their children?
Well, sometimes it could just be that we're finding it difficult to even broach the subject.
True, very true. But then there are some people as well, you know, working in the school, I see it. You know, there's some people that it's, you know, but sorry, Bev's cat. You know, I think we've all got to work together, haven't we? It's not, you know, we've all got to work together about it.
It's interesting what you say about the police tweeting about knives and what they confiscate, and but it's interesting to look at the other side of it, because when I go through my son's social media, I've seen young people post with knives, and it feels quite scary to know that. I've been in a position where I've seen someone on Instagram with a knife, and then they happen to be a local boy, and I recognize that boy, and I've just felt fear. I felt fear because I feel if you're brave enough to post with a scary knife, you might be carrying one right now. So I kind of thought, well, how does my son feel about walking down the street and potentially a lot of kids carrying knives now? Well, not a lot. Some kids, but or you think that because you saw them on social media. It's a scary place for kids right now because of social media.
Do you think it was any scarier when we were growing up though? Do you think it's scarier now?
Yes, I think so.
And it's because of social media, because before you used to just finish school, go home, and that's it. You were shut off until the next day, and now it's just 24/7 in your face. All that interaction, it's overwhelming, it's not healthy, and it's difficult to control as a parent.
It's difficult to control. Shut off the Wi-Fi. That's what my mom would say.
I think it's like you said, I think social media has a massive part to play. But I think there's almost two kind of conversations, because there's a conversation from us as parents and the abstract fear that I know I feel every time I hear a young person has lost their life again, you know, just needlessly at the hands of another young person. And unfortunately, what I see, I've got a son, and, you know, it's almost like it's just second, it's normal to them. And that concerns me. Like, they don't even think that's their reality of growing up in urban London, in London anyway. It's almost like they are so aware, if they don't know somebody who's lost their life to knife crime. They, you know, they know someone who's been stabbed. It's almost like it's such the norm. And that scares me, because how is that normal to be hearing that someone's lost their life? Because, and sometimes they're not even gang, it's not gang related. Sometimes it's in the wrong place at the wrong time, you know? And for me, I think my thing is, for young people, how you, like you said, there's so many young people that are walking around with weapons. So when we were growing up, it, you know, if you got into an altercation, you were thinking, can I fight? It's going to be a fist fight, you know, maybe it's an argument, maybe you're going to, you know, it's a cuss word. Now with young people, they have to think about, is that person carrying a weapon? You know, it's totally different times.
Well, you know, I was saying to my daughter that I wonder if all these, and I'm not blaming video games, okay, but it's this feeling that life is not really that precious, that if you get shot or if you get stabbed, they just assume, some people just assume you're going to recover, and that the injuries that you could sustain aren't necessarily going to be life-changing or life-threatening. I'm wondering if because we've allowed, or you know, the TV and certain programs to be infiltrating our homes, that we've normalized the way in which other people are treated, because it's them, it's not us.
The same with what you're saying there, Bev, though, as well, when you think about normalizing that, you know, somebody thinks that they've been attacked or that they're going to get better, it doesn't seem that the people that carry the knives think about the consequences if they do kill somebody, or if they do hurt somebody, or just being caught with the knife. These, that they don't seem to realize that, you know, if they're going to go to prison for 20 years, it's very different when they come out of prison and they're suddenly not 18 anymore. They're coming out as 38. Life's moved on. I mean, they don't seem to think about that side of it as well, the punishment side of it, because, you know, we wouldn't do that because we think, well, you know, when you think of how much time you'd lose because you'd be locked up and you'd lose this and you'd lose that. They don't seem to think that either, do they? They don't seem to sort of think about the consequences of what's going to happen to them as well, not just the person who's perhaps been killed, but also perhaps to the person who's killed.
Sorry, go on.
I think that the thinking doesn't even go that far. The thinking is, I want to feel protected, I'm going to carry a knife. And they don't go out with the intention to stab someone. They go out with the intention to, if it happens, I have a knife and I can protect myself. Almost like,
but then, you know, it's deterrent. But then, you know, when you go out, you put a hairbrush in your bag because you're going to brush your hair. If you're putting a knife in your bag, then, you know, the intention is there to use it, isn't it?
Well, it's like when I used to walk with pepper spray, right? As a young woman, because I was thinking, I'm going to protect myself. I was an alarm that I could pull out and it would go crazy, because I had those things to sort of, in case something happened to me and I wasn't able to shout out the way I wanted to, but I would be able to defend myself with pepper spray. You could say that about carrying a knife, I suppose, you know what I mean? But the reality is that pepper spray would have disabled you, but it wouldn't have killed you. Whereas the knives now, you know, what I understand, I hear what you're saying, LT, you know, people are carrying these things to protect themselves. But then what do we need to do, or what could we do in order to make them feel safer then?
But I think sometimes, like LT was saying, you know, the thing is there as well, the people who feel frightened and vulnerable will be carrying a knife when they're not the bad children. You know, that there's been a situation where they've perhaps been attacked, or perhaps something's happened that they end up carrying a knife when actually they're not the, you know, they're not the bad ones. They're carrying a knife because they're frightened.
When I was talking to my daughter, she said that wherever there's going to be a vulnerable person, there's going to be violence, because there are people out there who are already scouting for the people who are vulnerable. They already know who they're looking for. You know, the girls who parents are absent, or fathers absent, or mothers absent, the ones who, you know, aren't, who feel sort of like they want attention. She said, you're always going to have this issue around youth safety as long as you've got vulnerable people in the community. Do you think she's right?
I definitely think she's right. And I think sometimes we do think it's, oh, it's children from broken homes, but it is, it's even working parents who just don't have the time, you know, a child is walking home from school on their own, you know, just like you said, and self-esteem and low confidence and wanting attention. It's like, there's, I know people who are not from maybe deprived backgrounds as we would think, and they've still been targeted. These people that target them are very sophisticated in their approach now. This kind of grooming of young people. And so really it makes them very vulnerable, you know, because the again, social media is opens up such a world of information, and your young person can be in a WhatsApp group that, you know, someone can target them in there. They can be on Snapchat. There's so many different ways that people can target our young people. It doesn't even have to be that they've met them on the street. You know, you can give as much education around social media. Don't give out your information. Don't. But a young person tends to think it's never going to be them and it's never going to happen to them.
And I think following on from that as well, what happens with social media sometimes is so many people get involved in it. You know, it's not when we, you know, I mean, I'm older than you, but I mean, when we were younger, if you had a bit of a beef with somebody, the beef was between you and them. But nowadays, when it goes onto social media, before you know, there's 100 people involved because this one said this and this one gets involved and a cousin gets involved and that one gets involved. And I think that, again, social media is a problem because people jump on the bandwagon.
Well, LT, you were saying you go through your son's social media.
Yeah, when I've been able to, they get smarter now and they try and stop me from going onto their phones, and it's just a constant battle.
Well, my daughter said to me, she has an account I know about, an account I don't. And I said to her, well, now that you've told me I don't know about an account, then I want to see the account that I don't know about.
Do you remember that chap who come and spoke to us at Parent Power? No, did he? Yeah, he did. He spoke to us and he talked about the calculator on the phone.
Yeah.
Was you there, LT, when he spoke about the calculator, didn't he?
I always remember that.
That, and he thought it was a calculator, and it, behind it, it's a social. Do you remember? It just made me think about that. Yes.
And I think there's a lot of, so is it about us as parents being educated and being smarter and asking, learning to ask the questions that we're not asking in order to have the conversations with our kids to try and make them know that we are aware and also that we're there to support them?
I think the approach is to be, to seem naive about it. If you spot something on your son or daughter's phone, and instead of thinking, oh, this is this, this and that, and then coming up with your own perception, ask the questions, oh, what does that mean? If they are speaking in language like a bando, which is a drug house, so you will say, what does that mean? And, oh, have you been to that? Or how do you know about that? Just sound naive about it. I was part of a parent group from a lady who works as a crime child exploitation unit, because my son was identified as someone who may be criminally exploited. And you get a lot of advice on how to recognize things, and you get to speak to other parents, and you realize how much it affects other parents. We're thinking about how it affects kids' mental health, but actually the worry and the stress it brings to parents, it affects their mental health as well.
Of course. General worry. You know, I mean, when you become a parent, when I became a parent, guilt became my friend. I didn't know where it came from, but it was just guilt about everything. Guilt that I didn't spend enough time with them. Guilt that I didn't understand this. Guilt that I didn't do that. Guilt that I hadn't saved enough money. Guilt, guilt, guilt. So, and fear about my daughter's futures, because I was really worried about how they might be targeted by particular men who what I would consider to be undesirable. But, you know, my fear was about how was I going to have conversations with them and protect them. And I think just as a parent, that alone has its own mental health challenges. Have been in relationships that either work or don't work, or two of you pulling in different directions, that causes its own stresses and anxieties and fears. So parent and mental health, especially during COVID, and our young people's mental health during COVID, boy, I don't even know who would we ask to help? What kind of help do we need in order to try and ensure that our mental health and our kids' mental health are taken care of? Who?
Yeah, that's my question. It's been a tough period. And it was even tougher when Boris Johnson announced the date schools would reopen.
Yeah.
Because during the pandemic, my son was actually excluded from his school, mm-hmm. and was supposed to start SILS, which is a Southwark Inclusive Learning Centre,
mm-hmm.
or service. As he's classed as vulnerable, he's obviously able to go from throughout lockdown, but he's refused. Mm. Every other kid is at home, so why should I? Mm. Okay, that's fine. You stay at home. You're safe here. But so they started school this week, but he's still at home.
Mm-hmm.
And that build up all these weeks to know that all the kids are going to go back to school and he's not.
Mm-hmm.
That's been hard.
Yeah, of course. Because, I mean, it's been hard to see my child go back to school because she's going to be wearing the mask. That's what I was thinking, you know, was the biggest issue. But the biggest issue is mixing with young people who have not been out for almost a year properly. Who are just kind of like going to be going crazy at the seams because a lot of things they've been unable to live a normal teenage experience or existence. Mm. And so some of them are not going to function well.
I think the tragedy sort of is as well, it's like, it's particularly this year for the year 11s this year. Last year, the year 11s didn't have their exams, but because it was March, they sort of got to a certain point, and you get to the point really in March when a lot of the work you're then doing, you've covered the syllabus, a lot of the work you're doing is really sort of studying, you know, revision skills and all things. It's this year's year, they seem to have lost out on so much, you know, and, you know, now they're not having proper exams, we're still even not quite sure what's doing. Ours have had to come straight back to do mocks because they hadn't done their mocks. And you just really sort of, you just look at them and you just feel for them, because you just sort of wonder, how are they ever going to catch all this up? I mean, even to the extent of not going out on work experience, they didn't go out last year, they're not going to be able to go out this year. Work experience is such a valuable tool for them.
And some kids are not going to be able to find jobs right now.
Yeah, well, jobs are going to be hard. I think somebody was telling me the other day that their child had gone to university and they'd paid sort of everything up front, and then, you know, with the sort of assumption that they could get a part-time job.
Mm-hmm.
And now, of course, they, you know, bars and everything are closed, and they're in a real position now because of money. And that's, you don't think about things like that, do you? It's like, it's only sometimes when people start talking about things that you stop and think about the implications of them. It's like, you know, LT is just saying about a son there, you know, not wanting to go back to school. Today, some of the children at school today, honestly, they were coming in today because we're staggered back over 7 days. Some of them this morning, you just thought they were going on a holiday. They were so excited if you'd have heard them. You know, coming back to school, but then you don't think about the children that are going to struggle to go back to school.
We've got kids who have left school and they can't find work, because even all of us, some of us are on furlough. And even when we go back, we as parents are still worried about our financial obligations of keeping a roof and paying the rent and all the rest of it. And now we've got a young person who would normally be looking for any kind of part-time work to get their independence, and they're not going to be able to.
No. And I think, you know, that's like LT said, it's so difficult, because I know my son particularly struggled through education, and I had to do quite a lot to get him through, you know, with this kind of thing of, if you get your GCSEs, if you get your A levels, then you're going to get a better future. There's more going for you. He turned 18 in the pandemic, just completed his course, got into university, where the world should have opened up to him, where he's been waiting to be 18 and travel and, you know, get a job and go to university. All of a sudden, none of that was available to him. All of those opportunities, all of the promises that I'd been kind of been like, you know, get yourself in a good position, get an education, get qualifications, get yourself so you're in a position to basically dictate your future, has all kind of been out of the window, because now he started his university course, but he's doing a course which is very practical. It's hands-on. He's a person that likes to meet people. It's sound and music engineering. He's supposed to meet people in the industry. All of that's gone because it became online from his room, and he just didn't like that. And so now he's deferred that and then trying to get a job. He can't get a job. He can't find a job. There is no job. You know, I even actually did 5 applications for him on his behalf. And I got some said no response. You know, they kind of said no interview. You've been unsuccessful. Some didn't even reply to me. I felt demoralized because I thought, I'm someone who's an adult who's got a job and is working. And I'm applying on behalf of my son. And they're not even getting back to me. You know, his self-esteem and his confidence has been totally knocked. And it's like you said, Beverly, I wonder, and for people like LT, where is the help for her son? If he was already identified as vulnerable and he was, you know, he's not going back to school, how do you get him out of the house now? How do you get him on track for a future?
Well, I mean, one of the things I'd been thinking about, you know, mentoring, where can we get male mentors for young men specifically? You know, there are organizations who are doing it for women. I mean, I was speaking to an organization yesterday, but where is this sense of community where we know that people are going to, you know, either provide work experience or paid work and mentoring for the young people that are coming up, so that they can feel like they're a valuable part of community, rather than we have to dig in our pockets all the time, which we've been doing for ages with our kids. You know, when is something going to be given back to them to make them feel that they are needed and they're valued?
So some of this goes back to schools as well, doesn't it? Because, you know, if you're in a school that, you know, that are quite switched on, and they pick up on these things and offer, then you're all right. But if you're in a school that doesn't, it's like, it's just not equal opportunities, is it? It's just, if it just goes on what school you're in, then that really is so unfair to a child, isn't it?
That's
what I always think as well. You know, that's why I think a parent commissioner would make such a difference, because a parent commissioner can ensure that you know, that there's a more level playing field. Joined up thinking, and also better opportunities on a level sort of pitch, making sure that, you know, like the LT's in a position where she can approach school and they can say, well, why don't you try these people, or why don't you try that? Or you know, that some places are really switched on and others aren't they?
And that's I think the issue. We've got a disparity of offers, And that's why parents are fighting so hard to get into the right schools because of the right opportunities that will be available. But maybe we need to take that responsibility out of schools completely and have it elsewhere so that we can all access it equally. Might be an idea.
Yeah, because sometimes that can just be down to the school having one person who is good at it. That can totally be the difference, is just having one person who is switched on and picks up on things. One person.
But what I'm worried about is when that one person leaves, because when that person goes, then you don't have anything there because they were the ones carrying everything. So
it kind of needs to be a whole school approach, doesn't it? It needs to be that every member of staff is on board, that this is a whole school approach. Like you said, it can't be down to an individual, because unfortunately they become the pioneers, and when they move on, it kind of just gets dropped, it gets lost.
Mm. And as parents, we need support. You know, LT at the moment needs support in what's happening in her transition with her family. I need support, but it may be different, but we still, it's like we both have issues, but we've got to run around like rabbits trying to find who can help, when it might be nice to have that support in one place that would then signpost us out, rather than me running around trying to get that all over the place. I'm very conscious that we've got 7 minutes left. So the question that I would want to ask is, do we think then that having somebody in local government, or like a parent commissioner for in the mayoral office, focusing on things that are, or giving parents a voice and bringing us into a space whereby we would try and help to create solutions for our children, would that be beneficial? Yes or no?
Yes.
In my experience, yes, because a lot of the journey that I've been through with my son for the past year now, I feel like I don't really have a decision, or I can't really take things to a direction. I don't really feel like I have that power where I can make that choice.
Mm-hmm.
Throughout the journey, it feels like, okay, this is what you have to do now. You just have to go this way and that way. What makes it difficult is that, you know, the system doesn't work. It's not going to work for you or for your child.
Mm-hmm.
And having a parent commissioner, it will give me that backup, that sort of guarantee that someone's going to have my corner, and it's going to give me more power to just empower me to be able to live and to have that choice in education that I want for my son. And
I mean, I've just thrown it out there because I'm always thinking, is there a solution? But maybe we need more conversation, and we need more parent voices to be heard and to be taken seriously. And we don't want to wait until our children are severely injured or killed because of the violence that might be happening outside, or because the other people don't think it's a priority because it's not happening to their kids. I think, you know, we definitely need more. We need more conversation. We need government to listen and to act. And we need to be a part of that solution. That's what I think.
I also think having somewhere that's like a centralized sort of, in some ways it's like a sort of an information point, mm-hmm. that you're somewhere where you can go, like LT could go and talk to people about, you know, what options she has, where she can go and what she can do, and also that they could, you know, that they could have some sort of advocacy or mentoring that they could sort of offer and signpost. You know, that they could take on you know, volunteers. I mean, where the City Hall is, there's such, you know, a mass of offices and everything around there, that if they could sort of get people who were willing to do some volunteering, people to do some, you know, just somebody to talk to, somebody, you know, perhaps a solicitor who could just give you some ideas, you know. I think just to have like an information bank would make such a difference.
A power resource.
power resource that can advise you. Yeah.
I think, like you said, T, I think that's part of the problem is that, like you said, there are all these kind of things out there, but there's not one centralized place to get it from. And sometimes it's, you know, in certain boroughs, it's not across boroughs. Mm. It's very kind of niche. It's very, very specific for a certain community of people. Mm. And there does need to be something that's much more centralized. I think I remember being on a call with a barrister, and he was amazing. The amount of wealth of knowledge that he shared. Mm. And I just thought parents need to hear this man speaking. Mm. And like you said, there needs to be people who really understand policies, who really understand what's happening within education and can give the advice and signpost to the right organisations. Because I think what happens sometimes is, I know from my experience, you end up being in so many different organisations, and sometimes there's not actually, you don't get a solution.
Mm.
You're working with so many organisations, but they're not being effective.
Yeah,
they're not being effective because they're not working together, they're not sharing that information, and you're just repeating yourself to everyone, and it's exhausting.
It is exhausting, and that tolls on your own mental health, because you're constantly repeating and you're looking for a solution, and you're praying that this organization will be the one to help you. These are the ones who are gonna, and it doesn't always happen like that.
Mm. Oh, well, ladies, parents, I think I'll have to have another one of these and see if we can get some more voices. But I want to say thank you very much for taking your time, for sharing your stories, for sharing your thoughts with my listeners and myself. And I think we need to advocate for this more centralized more centralized approach. So I am probably going to end up saying goodbye because it's just going to cut off.
But I want to thank you for having me.
Beverly, thank you for having me and for this space.
Thank you for giving us this opportunity.
You're more than welcome. So have a blessed evening, all of you, and stay safe until we meet again. So as you can hear, we still think that this topic is still worth talking about. And I think we just still need to keep having conversations, really. So obviously, we'll have come back to this. Now, in the UK, we've got mayoral elections coming up. And some of the things that were referred to was within the Citizens UK delegates met a few weeks ago, and we realized from our members that a couple of the things that we're still saying are a focus during COVID-19 has been homes and housing and homelessness, and youth safety is still an issue amongst three other priorities that they had. But within the youth safety, we're asking specifically for a parent commissioner. We're asking the mayor to set up an office that has a parent commissioner who can centralise things for parents. And COVID has shown us even more that parents have carried a lot. You know, we've been through a lot through the lockdown. Those of us who've got young children, we've been doing homeschooling. Those with secondary kids, homeschooling. Those who have been homeschooling, students who are at university and have had to come home to do some schooling or to do their education. We've been trying to cope with lockdown. We are exhausted, and parental mental well-being is a reality. It's an issue. It's a challenge. So anyway, we're not going to get discouraged or disheartened, and it's okay even if we are. But we should keep talking, keep uniting, so that our voices can make some real effective change. So thank you for listening to this podcast. Please stay safe. And until next time, I'm out.